The Interesting Conversations with Interesting People podcast series with author Nigel Beckles.
Welcome to the podcast.
Please like the podcast and subscribe to this channel. Podcast. Thank you. The very best way to promote your podcasts. PodPage makes it easy to create a podcast website with just a few clicks. Every page is optimized to be found on Google and it stays up to date forever. For more information, visit podpage.com, the future of podcast promotion.
Have you experienced several failed relationships or been through a divorce? How can you avoid making the same mistakes again? How to avoid making the big relationship mistakes is out now.
Hi, my name is Nigel Beckles. My new book is packed with practical and common sense strategies that you can use to make better relationship choices.
Now you can discover the dangerous myths about love. If your relationship expectations are realistic, why you could be falling in love for all the wrong reasons.
How to avoid making the big relationship mistakes. It's a book that could change your life.
Available from amazon.co.uk. Kindle version also available.
Get ready for takeoff.
Welcome back to my Interesting Conversations with Interesting People podcast series. My guest for this episode is a licensed marriage and family therapist. He is also a pornography and sex addiction recovery expert. American Tony Overbeck. Hi, Tony. Welcome to my podcast series. How are you?
I am great, Nigel, and I'm really looking forward to this. I am. I've read some of your book, and I think we're gonna vibe. We've got some similar opinions here. This is gonna be fun.
I believe so. That's why I invited you. So, yeah. Where do you live at the moment?
So I'm in Northern California, over in the good old U.S. of A. So we're getting our first rainstorm ever here in months. Everybody's complaining, and people forget how to drive, and all those fun things.
I understand that you're a licensed marriage and family therapist, and you also help people overcome pornography and sex addiction. How did you become interested in sex and pornography addiction?
This is a great question, because it was absolutely not something that I went into the field to start working with. And as odd as this sounds, I was one of these kids that just wanted to help people. I did 10 years in computer software, but I was the guy that everybody would come to with their problems. And then I went back to school and got an advanced degree in counseling. And I just wanted to help people be better husbands and fathers. But then what I say this as a joke, but I realized as I started getting into therapy, guys don't come to therapy naturally. And so then all of a sudden, the only way to work with guys were when they were coming in with things like impulse control disorder, sexual compulsive disorder, and turning to pornography as coping mechanisms. And so it wasn't something I ever anticipated working with directly, but that was the way that I got to work with guys. And so the more men that I met with to help them become better husbands and fathers, that I realized often they were turning to pornography or just compulsive sexual behavior as coping mechanisms when they didn't feel like they were connected in their marriages or connected to their kids. And they didn't feel like they were good parents. So I really feel like that work kind of found me and my desire to help men become better husbands and fathers.
So what type of qualifications does a person need to help people with sex and porn addictions?
I feel like the biggest component is just the amount of time or that you spend on the couch and working with people that are struggling with this. You can go and get some certifications, certified sexual addiction therapist or some of those kind of things. But this is where things really get interesting, Nigel, because there really isn't a specific diagnosed medical condition for sex addiction or pornography addiction. So, and that's why earlier I was mentioning these things like impulse control disorder or sexual compulsive disorder. So people often turn to these things just like they would turn to food or gambling or their phones or video games. So there's a lot of ways we turn to unhealthy coping mechanisms. And so that's where I feel like that really being able to get to what the root cause is of why someone turns to these unhealthy coping mechanisms is the key. And so you can go get some qualifications or certification in helping people with certain components of what leads them to, whether it's sex or gambling or food or that sort of thing. But in a nutshell, I've worked with 1,500 or 1,600 individuals and then that are trying to get behind or get ahead of turning to these unhealthy coping mechanisms like pornography. And so then the more that you get to spend time with that over the last 15 years, you really start to develop a lot of tools that help people get there quicker.
So would you say then that addictions are driven by the same kind of components or issues?
If you look at the even just the definition of addiction from, if you're looking at the Society of Addiction Medicine, where it just says it's a treatable chronic medical disease involving complex interactions among brain circuits, genetics, the environment, and an individual's life experiences. So there's so many variables there, but they say that people with addiction use substances or engage in behaviors that become compulsive and often continue despite harmful consequences. So if you look at that definition of addiction itself, then you can see that you can almost plug anything that someone is turning to compulsively as something that then you can treat the addiction. And I love bringing up the point of you got compulsion and impulse. And I love talking about that, where I can help somebody start to overcome a compulsion. And so a compulsion is this just premeditated constant, you know, when am I going to get my next hit? Whether it is any of these porn, food, sex, gambling, whatever it is. And so you can have somebody get in a really good spot, but then they can still get hit by an impulse. And so an impulse is something that happens and it's not premeditated or in the spot. And so impulses happen. There's a clever acronym called HALT, when they're hungry, angry, lonely, tired. And so a lot of times you can really have somebody make a lot of ground on treating the compulsion to turn to porn or to turn to sex as a way to make them or help them feel better. But then they will still get in this spot where they really do feel like they have been disconnected from friends, or they don't feel connected in their job, or they may be sick, they may be tired. They may just have these chronic times of loneliness. And that's where the brain says, okay, I know what we can do. I know what we can do for a quick fix, a quick dopamine bump. So that's kind of where I feel like if you look at addiction in general, you can plug in almost any of those things that you turn to that could fit into that definition.
So what would you say is the difference between sex addiction and porn addiction?
That's a great question. So I often feel like there's a thing called the Coolidge effect, which is a whole fascinating thing that the Coolidge effect is, it's actually named after one of the U.S. presidents, Calvin Coolidge, which is really, there's a kind of a funny story with that, where when he, and the story is supposedly true, but it's where he and his wife were touring a chicken manufacturing plant in the 30s. And Mrs. Coolidge walks by and someone tells her that this male rooster mates, dozens of times a day. And so then she just says, how many times? And they say dozens. And then she says, tell that to the president when he comes by. So then when President Coolidge walks through, and then they let him know that, hey, your wife wanted you to know that this rooster mates dozens of times a day. Then he says, same female. And they say, no, sir. And he says, all right, tell that to my wife. And so what the Coolidge effect really speaks to is, this has been studied across the animal kingdom, but where, especially with rats, was one of the first places. But you put a rat has sex with a willing female, and then he immediately doesn't want to have sex with her again. But you bring in a second willing female, and then he'll have sex with her, a third one, her, until then he, in essence, collapses from exhaustion. And so when you kind of look at that, what happens is we're designed, if you kind of look at evolutionary biology, that we are going to pour out our dopamine and hyperfixate on this one person that is going to be our mate for life. And this is well before the days of pornography or, kind of easy access to frequent sexual partners or a lot of sexual partners. The more that people view porn, then the more that then they blast these dopamine neuroreceptors. And so it requires more of a fix to get that same that dopamine blast. So then what happens is people have to start turning to more and more intense things. So you'll often see people that start off, it's the old proverbial slippery slope argument, where they start off by looking at porn, and then they look at more and more porn, longer periods of porn. And then they start to look at, okay, I'm going to now start chatting with people, real people through sites. Then they may meet up with people, and then they may turn to actual a sexual compulsion where they're meeting with prostitutes or that sort of thing. So often I feel like there's a fairly big difference there between the porn addiction piece or the turning to porn as a coping mechanism and then taking it into real life, because that's this progress of just gaming this dopamine system. And so just wanting more and more of this novel or whatever that experience is.
I would be grateful if you gave our listeners a brief description of dopamine.
Yeah. So dopamine is so fascinating. It's the, it's part of the reward center of the brain. It's this feel good chemical, but it's also this chemical that is associated with hyperfocus. I am a diagnosed adult ADHD person. So I speak openly about that on my own podcast. And so what attention deficit disorder is people that lack enough dopamine. So when the joke is made that somebody can all of a sudden see a squirrel and now they're off on a tangent and they're talking about something else, the brain is just constantly looking for this, just something that will give it this just bump of this hyper-focused chemical dopamine so that then they can stay focused on something. And so when somebody is looking at porn, it is their reward system going crazy, and this dopamine starts to flow, and then they hyperfixate on even sexuality or whatever it is. And so dopamine is this, it's such a key component to the way that the brain works. And one of the most difficult things is that the more that we just feed that desire for more and more dopamine, we blast these dopamine neuroreceptors, and that can leave people sometimes feeling hopeless, saying, okay, well, what happens? Well, when they start to not turn to these coping mechanisms like porn or sex addiction, that it doesn't take long for the brain's an amazing thing that can start to kind of reset these neuroreceptors and get back to this place where that they don't require this insane amount of something novel to then create the same result of hyperfocus or pleasure. So you'll hear people that often talk about even almost like a dopamine fast, where people won't look at their phones very much, or they won't turn to these the excitement of video games or chatting with people online or whatever that looks like, in a hope that they can kind of get back to just being more present and being okay with their, just to be able to sit with themselves and not just require this novel experience to then keep them focused.
So how common is addiction to pornography?
This one's interesting. My office is actually in the same office with some attorneys that work with divorce attorneys. And so we'll share data at times. And over the years, there's been more and more of a pornography component in the filings of divorces in the U.S. at least. And so I feel like the reason I bring that up is I feel like it's just, it used to be something that I feel like people mainly only in maybe religious settings talked about, was, you know, pornography is this shame-based thing that people needed to avoid. But now we're starting to feel like we're starting to notice that it is becoming a bigger and bigger challenge in marriages, in relationships. If you look at the fastest growing, and I think this is what I loved about, you had some of this stuff in your book, but one of the fastest rates of people with erectile dysfunction is 18 to 25 year old men. They turn to porn, you know, pixels over people. And so when they get in real relationships and that person isn't perfect and they aren't just desiring them all the time, like porn does, that they have a harder time being present with their partner, with their spouse. There's a kind of a crazy bit of data too that I read recently, and it was talking about in the US again, at least, that the teenage birth rate has been down. And so a lot of people are saying, okay, all the public service announcements and those sort of things we're doing must be working. But there's another group of people that say, no, it's because the teenagers are turning to pornography and not to real partners. So therefore the teenage birth rate is down. So it's just, it's really kind of starting to affect all ages and relationships. So I think to answer your question, I think it's just a continual growing problem, but it's happening so slowly that I think that it's hard to recognize the overall impact that it's having as the younger generations. Now it's like an old man, you know, the kids these days, Nigel, growing up with access to pornography one or two clicks away on their phones, where you and I growing up, that wasn't the case. Wait till your parents left and go find out where dad kept the magazines. You know, that was that took some work.
So how do you believe pornography negatively impacts a person's life?
So I really feel like it just, people are missing out. And this is where I get to speak as a marriage therapist. I've worked with well over 1,000 couples in my office as well. And I feel like people are missing out on a better way to communicate or a better way to connect. I'm going to meet somebody where they're at. If somebody's coming into my office and they say they want to stop looking at porn, then I often want to say, you know, I want to know more about that. Because is it because they feel bad when they are turning to porn as a coping mechanism? Is it because they feel like this is impacting their relationships or their confidence? Or is it just because somebody else is telling them that you need to stop looking at porn? Because the person really needs to want to not look at the porn or not look at porn, you know, not turn to there as a coping mechanism. And so if they aren't bought into that, then in essence, they're going to probably come out of this even feeling worse, because they have tried to do something that they didn't necessarily even feel like was necessary. And now they're not successful at it. And the reason I'm going down this path, Nigel, is because it takes a long time for us to get to the place that we're at in any kind of activity with the brain. And so we often then want to then quickly be able to not do some unhealthy behavior. So when somebody has this years of porn as a coping mechanism, I always say one of the biggest triggers is not they see a beautiful woman. I call them crimes of opportunity. So somebody comes home and no one else is in their house. Then the brain says, hey, we could look at porn. Then they look at porn and then they feel like, man, why do I do it? You know, I had other things I needed to get done. And then they beat themselves up. Why did I do that again? Okay, next time I won't do it. but then they don't take any action on what to do in advance of the next time that they're going to find themselves home alone, you know, where they need to, when I'm recognizing I'm going to be home alone, I need to call a friend, or I need to go outside or not be alone. Or so I just feel like people just continually find themselves in these same patterns of behavior, but then are expecting some different result. I think I'm just kind of laying out this groundwork of they really have to feel like there's a reason why they want to not look at porn. And then it's going to take action, and they need to give themselves a lot of grace, because they can't anticipate perfection either, because there are going to be times where they're going to let their guard down. And it's right back to what we talked about earlier, where an impulse, you know, they may have the compulsive nature down. They're not continually thinking of when's their next dopamine hit from porn or sex addiction. But then they find themselves in this moment where then they are hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. And the brain says, I know how to get a quick bump. And so that can be really difficult.
Well, I think there's a general stereotype that only guys watch porn. But I used to date a woman, and she loved watching pornography. So do women become addicted to watching pornography as well?
I do see that. But I'm glad you bring that up, because I think it does go back to that. Everyone has their own experiences around sexuality. And so when some people grew up where they turned to porn earlier, or I've worked with plenty of women who just porn was in the home, you know, where they would walk in and their parents would be watching it, or their dad would have it on the TV and that sort of thing. Or somebody had early exposure to pornography. And so then they become more sexualized. But in olden days, we used to say, if someone is going to be exposed to porn, you know, then what do we do? Now it's, oh, everyone is going to be. So it's not an if, but when. And so then it, depending on what age people get exposed to porn, then they're kind of heading down. And it sounds like I'm being ominous and dramatic, but I'm not. But I always say that if a kid's in fifth grade, for example, here in the U.S. And he, one's been exposed to porn, he's seen naked women in videos, and his parents have had this on, or his cousin's shown him something on the internet. But then when he shows up at class and he's sitting beside somebody that's never seen porn, to the person that has, even at a young age, all of a sudden, you know, Mrs. Johnson, she has curves, and she, you know, all of a sudden he's looking at her like, whoa, she's kind of like the videos I've seen. And the other kid is just eating paste or whatever they do in fifth grade, you know? And so when you look at it that way, a lot of times I feel like a lot of the women that I've worked with, it really was just an early exposure to pornography. And then it just becomes something that's kind of more of what they do. I'd say the far more numbers that I've seen are men. And this is a little bit of the stereotype, where men, it's more about the physical act or the physiological release that they get from porn. And a lot of the times when I've worked, and again, general stereotype, but when I've worked with women that have struggled with this, it's been more about the relationship that they wish they had. The types of porn that they often find themselves looking at are more of the, here's this intense relationship where they felt the woman felt desired and wanted, where a lot of times the guys, she has a perfect body, she digs the guy, and then, you know, there's a physiological release. So sometimes I even feel like you're looking at even different components that lead up to who watches porn and why.
So if a couple in a relationship want to watch porn to spice up their sex life, is that okay?
You're asking all the good questions, my friend, because this is one where I think even 5 years ago or more in my practice, I would have said, oh, of course not. They need to do this. But then I've realized, okay, who am I to determine what that couple needs to do? But I feel very confident in saying that I feel like there is a better way. And so if a couple is coming into me and they're struggling with various things in their relationship, and they bring up that they do watch some porn together, I do feel like typically both people aren't equally on the same page of what that experience is like for them. And so that's where I feel like, okay, let's just right now look at the fact that they are looking at porn. Let's talk about what each of you get from that relationship with pornography. And a lot of times I feel like the underlying piece to that is that they're almost able to say, what do you think about this porn that we're watching? What do you like about it? Instead of them being able to say, here's my version of sexuality, or here's what I've always wanted, or here's my fantasies or my dreams. And we just don't communicate real effectively when it comes to what I call these higher charge topics, sex, politics, religion, finances, parenting. These are these high level topics. And so we have a hard enough time, you know, saying, where do you want to go to dinner tonight? Or that's where, you know, where do you want to go on a vacation? And then we try to say, by the way, talk to me about your, you know, your sexual fantasies, or that sort of thing. So I feel like pornography often is this thing that then couples are using to try to figure out where each other stands on different things sexually. So when I can get a couple that really start to learn how to communicate effectively, I feel like they can often express things that they felt like they could only express through porn into their relationship. And this is where I feel like now they've got this opportunity to really be present with each other, and they don't need this other, you know, these other people in their bedroom, in a sense. But again, my job is not to judge. So if that is something where they feel like, no, this is working fine, I'm not going to try to talk them out of it. But oftentimes I will say, okay, I'm glad that it's fine. So just, you know, by way of an exercise in communication, tell me what you like about porn or what you don't necessarily like about it as well. And I feel like that's where the gold starts to come. So that's a great question. I like that one.
Well, I know you also cover narcissists and narcissism in your work.
Yeah.
Do narcissists have sex addictions?
So at the core of narcissism, there's a phrase I love talking about. And there's this concept of where every little kid growing up is a little narcissist by definition. You know, they're a little egocentric. They don't have a lot of empathy for the plight of others, and the world revolves around them. And so then when we move forward, the goal, I often say that we're trying to help somebody go from every kid self-centered. And then with the right modeling or the right tools, we go from self-centered to self-confident. And so it's this spectrum along the way. So when I talk about narcissism, I often say that there's a piece in there where when we feel like we are being criticized. Now, this is where I'm going to start with the every person, a little narcissist, then moving into adulthood and more mature relationships. But when we feel like we're being criticized, we immediately are so fearful of being shamed. So if somebody says something about, I wish that we could do more of this sexually or whatever that would be, the partner immediately hears that as criticism. So then in order to not go to this place of shame of this person thinks I'm a horrible individual, they'll do anything to protect their fragile egos. And by anything, it's the gaslighting, or it's the anger, or it's the withdrawal, or it's the victim mentality, or whatever that looks like. So I often see that when I'm working with narcissists, it just becomes a very egocentric or selfish version of sexuality. So, you know, so sometimes I feel like it could take on so many different facets, from a victimhood mentality in order to get their sexual needs met, or an aggressive, you know, this is the way I need to get my sexual needs met, or I'm going to look at porn, or I'm going to act out sexually, but then I'm not going to take, you know, the narcissist isn't going to take ownership, and it's going to be because of what the other person did. And so I just find that it isn't always the case that I find that people with the narcissistic tendencies or traits have a commingling diagnosis of some sort of sexual compulsive nature. But I feel like they oftentimes, when they don't feel connected or understood or heard or validated or so many things, that if they happen to be somebody that has tied their own coping mechanism to anything that has to do with sexuality, then they are quickly going to go to various situations of whether it is porn or sex with somebody else or emotional infidelity or those sort of things. I think the most difficult thing is then not taking ownership or accountability about it with their spouse, and then not being able to really take ownership with a therapist or that sort of thing. So that's a long way to say, I find that that is often the case, but unfortunately, I think that that's a really difficult piece to work with.
Well, I only ask the question because I've observed during my lifetime, certain guys, and these certain guys have got multiple children with various women. Now, I'm talking multiple children, 7, 8, 9 children for various women.
Wow.
Which leads me to think, well, if they are narcissists, then there must be some type of addiction driving their behavior.
Yeah. Well, and there's a belief that a lot of, in the world of narcissism, there's a big impulse control issue. Yes. And so that's where I feel like, you know, if you take impulse control issue with lack of taking ownership or accountability for one's own actions, and that's a, you know, that's a powder keg of somebody then just acting out sexually.
Yeah. Well, I should also mention that women can also be narcissists. So
yeah,
let's put it all on the guys.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you created an online pornography addiction recovery program. How does your program actually help people?
Yeah, no, I appreciate you bringing that up, because it's been something where I sometimes joke about the fact that I've had it for years, and it's a real strength-based model. And when I started it, the strength-based approach wasn't really as popular. There was still this medical model of 12-step groups and kind of this, I'll go and sin no more, you know, don't ever do this again. And so my Path Back Recovery program is really about acknowledging that this is an issue or a challenge, and it's something that people don't want to continue to turn to, taking that shame away, saying that, okay, well, you're not a horrible individual, you're a human being, and you're turning to these things because of things in your life that have put you in the spot where this is your go-to coping mechanism. And then I start working on these, what I call these 5 voids, where it's helping them really become better, if they have kids, becoming a better parent, if they're in a relationship, having better communication skills, if they're a spiritual person, having a better connection with their faith. If they're in a job, it's really trying to figure out a way to have a job that really addresses their individual values, so they have a sense of purpose. And then oftentimes the health component, Most of us get to a certain age and we always assume that we would have the six pack abs and we'd be, you know, running marathons and all that stuff. And then all of a sudden they're overweight and sitting on the couch and thinking, you know, oh, I should have, could have been. So I feel like these five different voids I address in my online recovery program. So sure, we can do nice little behavioral things. We can set up relapse prevention programs and we can set up things where if somebody does have a setback, here's how you get back on the saddle. But it's really about doing the work to figure out what drives you, what makes you feel more connected in those areas of your life so that the siren song of pornography as a coping mechanism, it starts to dull over time. But I would get a vibe that this concept of harm reduction, which comes from the drug addiction world, that that I brought into my pornography recovery program, which means that if somebody can stop altogether and never do it again, great. The percentage of people that can do that, it's not so high. So that the harm reduction model is that if somebody is literally going and acting out with the other individuals, prostitutes or that sort of thing, that then the harm reduction model is then if they are then moved down to just looking at porn, that is progress. You know, if they're looking at hardcore porn to softcore porn to images, or, and so it's this just harm reduction model because that helps give somebody strength or they start to feel like, no, I'm improving instead of just feeling like, well, you know, it's been 3 weeks. I had a setback. So there you go. What am I supposed to do? And I feel like oftentimes when I work with the individuals that come into my office, you know, they'll talk about that. Okay, I know I was making progress, but I had another setback. And it's almost like they're wanting me to say, oh man, well, I guess we gave it a shot. You know, go and start looking at more porn then. That's just who you are. And so my whole program is really more around the trying to really become the person that they want to be, and while trying to lessen the turning to these unhealthy coping mechanisms.
Well, Tony, you're currently working on a book. What will it be about?
So, you know, I have a book that I did, I co-authored with a guy that has in the US here was a local politician, ran a film festival and then got caught for porn addiction or porn or acting out. And we wrote a book called He's a Porn Addict. Now What? An Expert and a Former Addict Answer Your Questions. And so that one has been a bestseller here in the US, and where we took 8 chapters of questions and I answered it and he answered it and we never read each other's responses. So that one's been pretty fascinating from the clinician and the addict. Now I'm working on, actually I have a couple books. I've got one on marriage. And so I've got a big part of that where I'm going to address exactly what we're talking about today of how to have these conversations in a more productive way around sexuality and things like pornography, because I really feel like we're so afraid in our relationships of contention that we avoid any kind of tension altogether. And really, when you have a good framework of a way to communicate, that tension is where the growth occurs. And so I really want to help people have the conversations around, instead of, I can't believe you look at porn, to, hey, tell me what you're, you know, what that gets you. Tell me what are we maybe missing in our relationship that you feel like pornography is adding? And that's a hard conversation to have without, I feel like, the right framework, because we do feel like, oh my gosh, this is about me. You know, they're looking at porn because I must be less than or broken or unlovable. When in reality, no, it's actually the desire to connect with somebody that, and they feel like that doesn't go well, which then drives the desire to turn to this unhealthy coping mechanism. So the book's going to be about that. And I actually have one about interacting or get in relationships with narcissistic individuals as well. But that one's one maybe you and I can talk about on my podcast sometime, you know?
So in terms of the book regarding pornography, when do you hope to have that published?
Well, so the one, He's a Porn Addict Now What's, actually available now. That one is on Amazon, and you can also get that one on Kindle. And then the one that's talking about how to communicate about pornography in your relationships, that one's due out, I think, in summer of 2022. So still have a little bit of time for that one. Yeah.
So Tony, how can people contact you?
Yeah, please head over to it's easiest just to go to tonyoverbay.com. And I actually have a marriage course. I have a free parenting course. I've got the pornography recovery program, Path Back Recovery. And then that also has links to my podcast, The Virtual Couch, which is 5 years old, 290 episodes there. And I've got a new podcast called Waking Up the Narcissism. That's, man, that one's been phenomenal. Just the way that's received. And I love that, Nigel, we were talking a little off the air of what a need that is for people to feel heard and understood that are in those kind of relationships as well. So all roads can start at tonyoverbay.com, or if you want to skip right to the recovery program, it's pathbackrecovery.com.
Tony in California, USA. Thank you very much for your time. Much appreciated.
Nigel, it's a pleasure. I can't wait to talk to you again.
Please join me for interesting conversations with interesting people, featuring interviews with award-winning authors, relationship and life coaches, therapists, and a wide variety of people with intriguing stories to share. Interesting conversations with interesting people.
Available on all major podcast platforms now.